Ladies and gentlemen, the following radio event, truly one of the most unusual of its kind, contains material that may be too shocking and intense for some audience members. If you have a heart condition or are easily upset, we urgently recommend you exercise listener discretion and immediately turn your radio dial.
Hello there, and welcome to the exciting world of HIP.
If the radio played?
No, not at all.
You don't straighten up, boy, I'm gonna kick a mud hole in your backside and stomp a drop.
The whole world's gone crazy.
This whole thing makes me sick. You make me sick.
Radio people ought to do something about this. You know, it's just not right.
Not so sure it's a radio thing.
We'll be right back.
and dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. One more time, baby. Yeah. It shakes me up to see the way you walk. It tears me up to hear you talk. Yeah. Oh, baby.
Well, what are you all standing around for? Come on, enjoy yourselves. Everybody dance. Music, music.
City is now being flooded with stomach distress bags.
Paradise View this Saturday evening, tradition of happy hour radio between 6 and 8. Got some special surprise mystery guest coming up. Yeah, that's going to be happening very soon, so stick by your radio dial. Yeah, and make sure you're around to hear the magic. Hey, what did we just hear? Well, we had a big stack of the old noise there on 45 RPM record. Finishing up with one of our favorites, Joe Houston. Joe Houston and his fabulous tenor with Hush Your Mouth there on the Chem Record label. We have Joe Houston's phone number. We will establish contact with him soon. Before that, Fool's Paradise favorite, yeah, on the Prism Record label at a beautiful Dayton, Ohio. The couplings, yeah, with Dill Pickle. Also in there, another kind of cool instrumental offering. Already in the Supremes on the Dayton Record label out of Ontario, California, with Ombre. Kicked it off with a super cool one, Undertaker's theme. Dr. T and the Undertaker's, where else but on the Target Record label. That's what kicked it off for us today. We're going to have some special announcements later. You know, the big Halloween fest, big Halloween party with Nathaniel Mayer, the A-Bones, coming up next week. Have you decided what you're going to wear as a costume? We hope you have. We trust that you did. Also, we got some worthy reissues to get together. And as mentioned, a surprise. Well, I hear someone's at our door. Let me go over there. And let's see who it is here. Just open the latch. Let's see who we have. Why, it's Lux and Ivy from the Cramps. Welcome.
Like, hi.
Wow, it's dark in here. This is kind of scary.
We often lose guests on the way down through the abandoned mine shaft, but you two didn't
seem
to have a problem.
Why are you locking that door?
I don't want you to worry your little red head about that.
Oh.
Now, why don't you two sit down, and I'll pour you some orangeade. We'll put on a little mood music, too. Yes, that's nice. Now, let's talk about your new double CD, How to Make a Monster. It must have been a gas going through the old photos and demo tapes.
It was a gas and it was a strain. It was hard to do. We thought it would be easy and it, you know, bit off more than we could chew. But
it was about four times as long as it finally ended up, but we had to throw out all the illegal stuff.
Right.
When somebody told us it was illegal.
Right.
Because we don't ever do anything illegal.
Above board, as always. Now, as a native Northern Californian, it's kind of hard for me to come to terms with something cool coming out of Sacramento. I mean, what was your time in Sacramento like?
We were out of place completely there. We would get jeered at from the street. It's true that we met hitchhiking. Later on, we'd hitchhike together, and Lux would be in drag. We went through different phases. One where I would try, you know, look as much like Mark Bolan as I could, and he'd look like this tall woman. But we found out we'd get rides easier. Guys would say, "Hey, girls, want to go to a party?" And I'd do the talking, so Lux wouldn't have to use his manly voice.
I'd get out of the,
you know,
out of the car. And
but
go.
I mean, we were total freaks.
Thank
it was
you
a
for
very
the invitation.
It's weird because it was like kind of a hippie capital, but very uptight. Like unless you were like kind of a farmer hippie. You know, just T-shirt and jeans. You were out of place there, and people just catcall us out of cars. You know, we just kind of were in fear of our lives sometimes there, and we were happy to flee.
It's all about freedom, kind of like communism. You know,
yeah.
you couldn't do anything different from anyone else, but you were free.
But you had a free run at the thrift stores, at least.
Well, yeah, we cleaned up at thrift stores, and that great store opened, Ed's Rare Records on the K Street Mall. He kind of indoctrinated us. You know, we said, "Why are these records so expensive? What are they?" And then he'd play them and explain and turn us on. And we were kind of scouts for him. We'd go to the junk stores and bring things and swap them for his records.
Any early inspirations, vinyl-wise, that kind of set you down the road?
Well, one thing, I guess it doesn't influence our music much, is, you know, we're still very into doo-wop, and that was kind of our earliest collecting thing. Right after we found Ed's Red Records, we met this guy named Robert at this other record store. He was this Mexican guy that lived in West Sacramento, and he spoke more Spanish than English, and I don't know why he latched on us. We were like this odd couple or trio, and
because we'd light up a joint and he liked to stare at you.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think it got him out of the house. But he, you know, and that's where we fell in love with doo-wop, mainly the doo-wop ballads, because he had his spares, like his scratchy, you know, like when he found a better copy. He gave us a box one day of about 50 records of like his duplicates.
78.
And it just got us started, you know,
stuff.
And it was all
wow.
Doo-wop. And
just gave it to us.
And that's still our main fetish is the vocal group, which, you know, clearly isn't part of what we do. We don't do harmony or anything, but it's just, that's what we're really into.
Well, why don't you give a spirited defense for vocal groups? I mean, it is an aspect of your music indirectly, and you know, I mean, mindless fun comes in all shapes and colors, like women's underwear.
It's magical music. It's like a drug. It's like it just takes you to another place, another time. I mean, records are just amazing because it's like a mechanical documentation of recreating something of people who might be dead now or whatever, and then they're in the room. It's sort of like a way of invoking their presence by just putting on this, you know, a CD or a record or whatever, and there they are.
If you put on some of those Flamingos records when they were on End Records or some of that stuff, it sounds like you're on drugs all of a sudden. It's like you've just taken acid or something. They've got this big echo chamber, and they all sound like they're from another dimension, all these weird warbling sounds in the background and everything. A lot of those early Bird groups, all those Bird groups from the 40s and the early 50s, what they were doing. it really was like a drug experience. It sounded like that. You got high from listening to those things.
Well, I mean, you listen to something like Only Have Eyes, and it's so sexy and brooding.
Yeah.
I know.
Spooky, it's haunted, otherworldly.
Yeah.
Each one of them is just like you take that little piece of plastic or 78 and you put it on, and it's just a little world unto its own. You know, it's just something, it's just a door to another dimension.
And one of the things that had me salivating in the booklet was the picture of your record collection in Akron when you guys went back to
Ohio. On the pool table.
Yeah, we had to argue with my parents. Let us borrow the pool table, and they thought, well, maybe he'll get good at pool. Maybe he'll be good at something finally. And we just wanted it to put something to hold our records.
Yeah, but it's just great seeing the cardboard boxes full of the old 45s. And you guys were doing this before the reissue era. This is really kind of uncharted territory.
There were no reissues, and we even remember when we got a Sonics reissue that came out in the mid 70s, we had to mail order that, and the only other reissue things we had was two records we sent to them from Holland. That was that collector label,
a white label records.
Yeah, and we had to wait, you know, for, you know, 8 weeks or something for it to come from Holland. Everything else had to be original. If that was the only way you could get exposed to any of that, was through originals, through finding them in thrift stores. There was no other way. Find them yourself or get some friends that have them, and you know, there was no other way. And even we didn't have, like, cassettes, really, even the first. And that wasn't until, like, 75, you know.
Yeah.
So there wasn't even, like, trading cassettes of things going on.
I mean, I think of that as record collecting at its best, because you're out there and just looking for this cultural flotsam that has been buried by the sands of time. And again, it's almost America at its best, too, because there's just this weird, unpredictable stuff that you could luck into. I mean, even in Sacramento, I just played this record the other day, the Mystery Trio on Camellia. It's this wigged-out rockabilly record. It's a super odd one.
Wow.
And there's just so much. I mean, that's what a lot of people don't understand. There are thousands of these records.
I know.
And there be? But there is. It's like how...
There's an endless supply.
It's like an
that
oil
you keep
well,
finding
you know?
Them still. Who else was on Camellia? What was the name of that great group?
The Nervous Cats?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Bailey's Nervous Cats. Right. And they're so good. They're from Reading, but I guess they must have played in Sacramento. And they seem stuck in time because in the 60s they were doing music that sounded kind of like 50s. Oh, badass, JD. Cool.
Great CD of that stuff out now, but we were finding those singles from those guys when we were living on that Camellia label. It was,
and you know,
just great stuff.
What I think about it is that it's almost more about the kind of freewheeling entrepreneurial environment that existed, you know, in the 50s and 60s, when some guy who owns a hardware store could take $500, record his kid's band. There was potential to get it
anything
played.
Anything could be a hit.
Yeah.
It was reasonable to think anything could be a hit.
And
it
every one of them thought
the
they were going to have a hit, too. They were convinced.
And when you heard the radio, you would hear, you know, Frank Sinatra next to a rock and roll record next to, you know, and it was all mixed up. I mean, I remember when FM started, everyone was like, God, get rid of that top 40. But the thing with top 40, everyone heard it. All your neighbors heard the same songs that you did, so everyone was in on it, you know.
That record by the Phantom, that guy, you know, like, that's just the craziest record ever recorded and stuff like that. And that guy recorded that insane, crazy thing and then said, I know where Pat Boone goes to church. And he ran out there and grabbed Pat Boone coming out of church and said, you got to listen to my record. It's crazy. It's from hell. It's rockabilly. It's out of control. You'll love it, Pat. You know.
And he put it out on Doc.
And he put it out. You know?
It's such a remarkable record. Every time I play it, I know the scream is coming.
Yeah.
But I jump every time. It startles me.
The B-side of that record is wonderful, too.
Yeah,
the B-side
is.
That's another thing we like that you don't ever hear mentioned too much is the B-side, the ballads of those rockabilly records. They're a lot like the doo-wop groups. They're these weird, strange things. They usually sound like they're off-center.
Very after-hours, yeah.
Oh, just crazy stuff.
Well, B-side's akin to, again, just that kind of entrepreneurial environment that existed. You just threw whatever unique crap you could come up with, you flung it out there to see if it would stick. I mean, you see the same thing.
Green Onions, I read the story, that was meant to be a B-side. It had a different name, and Green Onions was the name of the other side of some other song, and then they started jamming, and that was Green Onions, and then somehow they ended up pushing that, and look how huge it is. You know?
Well, I don't want to get too far out here, but there's part of that creative process that you find on B-sides that is off the cuff, incidental. I was talking about this with a friend the other day, you know, saying Louie Louai or Texas Chainsaw Massacre Cree, just little stupid incidental things that become totally inspiring. And, it's just kind of that environment that B-side stuff happens.
Yeah. I think that's solid evidence for that this stuff is floating around somewhere in outer space right above the Earth. And the people that are the real crazy entertainers, I think, somehow just met it, just, you know, they're picked by some entities that are still floating around out there, and they shoot them with a lightning bolt into their head, and they go, there it is. And you don't even know where it comes from, you know. I mean, you certainly couldn't think that stuff up. You know?
It's reminiscent of a great remark made by this entertainer out of Pittsburgh, Tony Capri. Someone asked him about his talent. He said, God made the pizza, I just deliver. So, say, it just happens. I can't help it.
Cheesy.
Yeah, yeah. So just to kind of finish up on the record thing, another, I think, inspiring aspect of it, or important aspect of record collecting, again at its best, is that you're forced to kind of assemble things on your own. You know, you go and you dig through a pile of 45s, it's country, it's gospel, it's blues. You end up discovering different stuff, and then there's kind of an art to the way you compile it on your own, and you see that unifying thread between Reverend Elder Beck, Winehead Willie Put That Bottle Down, to, the Swanks Ghost Train, you know, and you can make your tapes, and it seems like junking for records kind of inspires that.
Yeah.
And I think record collecting fiends, I know, with our record collection, we'll just, you know, be going crazy and drinking too much coffee and whatever, and we'll say, how about if we put all the blue labels together? You know, how about in alphabetical order? Oh, no, how about in the years they came out? Well, wait a minute, how about record labels? Wow, what an idea, you know. And, you know, before long, you're completely insane, which is the point.
One thing about the records, too, and digging through stuff, I always like to get things I've never heard of before, you know, that like the obscure and bizarre has a constant hold on me. And I found over the years certain good words to look in titles. I wonder if you have some. I mean, boogie, beatnik, bug, chicken.
Those have got to be it. And we do. I can't think of which ones, but there are things you get to know the look of a label and even. We'd even been told early on that that even publishing, like BMI would publish rock and roll, but if it's ASCAP, they wouldn't. I guess they had their criteria and they wouldn't publish things, so just avoid it if it's ASCAP. But I don't know. You might lose something doing that, too. And.
I like any of those bug records because I'm old enough to remember. I would watch in the windows at the teenage dances and stuff. My older brother, who thought he was Marlon Brando and stuff like that, would go to all these dances. I had to stand out and look in the windows, but there were these girls, just the sexiest girls you've ever seen, in the tightest clothes and stuff there. And the one great dance was the bug. I thought it was the greatest one ever because they'd just do all this stuff. They just move around and grab themselves all over, and they were searching. They had a bug on them, just like a cat or something, and they were just grabbing it from every place they shouldn't have been grabbing it, and then finally they'd grab it and they'd get it and they'd throw it on the person next to it, and then that girl would start, you know, doing her.
It was a dance.
Oh man,
yeah, stomping roaches.
Kind of a dance. It was more like of a conniption fit, you know. But wow, a very sexy dance.
Well, I'm working on an addition to the webpage for the radio show to have all the bug songs and have it like crawling with roaches. So look for that in the near future. And I also noticed, I read in some interview that the first record you got, Ivy, was or the first one that held a spell over you was Purple People.
Yeah, it was. I didn't have it. I was a toddler. My brother had it, and he or my family. I think it was me and my brother. Purple People Eater. The one I was most obsessed with was Marsh and Hop. And I'm surprised that, because even on oldie stations, I never hear that anymore. And I think it was a big hit at the time, but I'm not sure. Because I'll hear Purple People Eater and Witch Doctor. But Marsh and Hop, my brother would use that to amuse his friends. He'd say, watch what she does when I put this on. And I would just fly around the room, you know, and just like get on the couch and jump up and down. I'd lose my mind to Marsh and Hop. It's really pounding rocker. It was this strange vocal group thing. It still amazes me, that song, and I still get that kind of urge to fly around when I hear
and
it.
And I still like watching her.
Yeah. But yeah, it was like they thought this is hilarious, you know, let's put this on and watch what she does.
You know, it's good for kids to have some subversive stuff.
Yeah, and the novelty thing appeals to little kids, but real rocking too, because we, is it John Spencer's kid, Charlie, was obsessed with that song Gizmo.
Oh, sure.
Which is rocking, but it's got a novelty thing to it, too.
Yeah, Jimmy Heap.
Yeah.
I think there's a great danger that children, if they don't have novelty records, they can grow up and get a job, go to school, you know, and then die and never become crazy or anything. It's you've got to be very careful.
Mad Magazine played the same role, I think,
totally.
Oh, yeah.
What me worry.
Thousands of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like When My Dimples Turn to Pimples This Year. That's a good one. I Got a Nose Job. That's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, a little cardboard record. Yeah, no, that's amazing. Oh, any records that you've been jonesing for forever that...
I think we've got what we know about, so it's still anything new as a surprise. There's less surprises, but now we haven't caught up. When we're in Pittsburgh, there's this label, Itzy, that puts these CDs, so we haven't caught up on that. We own about half of that series, and their last time they had more, so we had to get them all.
Oh, right.
Some of the Mad Mike, that the DJ.
Oh, he's my hero, yeah.
Yeah, which is how we became aware of Goo Goo Muck, you know, was from a Mad Mike LP.
Sure.
Compilation.
I'd love to get an original copy of Scream by Ralph Nielsen and the Chancellors. That would be great.
Yeah, I think they're like two copies.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, Mad Mike, I'm glad you mentioned him. He's a total hero, and this relates to Mad Daddy. And that Mad Mike was able to take these weird-ass records like Goo Goo Muck or Camel Walk by the Saxons and turn them into regional hits. And
yeah,
it's just mind-blowing that he'd have a record hop and 5,000 kids would show up and dance around to Camel Walk.
More than for an artist. They wouldn't turn that, like they said, not for the Rolling Stones or
right,
for something, but for him to DJ that. And that's why, like back when the hits were regional, like the Sonics, they were popular in the Northwest and Pittsburgh because of Mad Mike.
Yeah.
And Swamp Rats were covering Sonics song, you know, or, you know, just because of Mad Mike.
Oh, I had a chance to see Mad Mike do some shows over the years, and very eccentric individual, but a total hero. He had records squirreled everywhere, and very secretive about the identity of the records, but he had the total unique ear, and again, he found that unifying thread between a vocal group ballad and some wigged out, you know, three carburetors, you know, just oddball stuff.
Yeah, it's like some people, like disc jockeys, they're like a filter, like they're filtering all this cosmic information in a way that us masses can understand.
I think they were some of the earliest computers, actually, disc jockeys, you know. They're filtering out all the stuff like Snooky Lanson and stuff like that was going into the shredder or whatever they had. And somehow somebody like Mad Mike, just the cream rose to the top there.
Well, they're also that mischievous influence, like Mad Magazine or the novelty records. You know, teens, preteens could tune in and hear someone who wasn't selling insurance or doing what their dad did. It was like some wigged out guy screaming and having fun, and the party never ended.
Yeah.
Party doesn't have to end. I mean, I guess that's one of the things I really admire about you guys, is that, you know, you got inspired by the music and movies and stuff, and it wasn't just a diversion. It was the thing.
Yeah.
There's some about R&B and rock and roll, the early stuff. Now you say rock and roll, and that could mean, you know, a sale at a car lot or something. It means anything now, you know. But real rock and roll, the stuff based on the blues when it first started, that music is so timeless. It'll never get old. You know, 500 years from now, I think people will be, you know, rolling around on their pod stems or whatever happens, and they'll be listening to these same records we're talking about right now.
Well, they exude an incredible sense of style, you know, and you know, once you hear the musical Lynn Twins, yeah, you're forever transformed, you know. I mean, do it like Sparkle Moore. Choose her as your guardian mm-hmm. and savior, wherever she may be.
Yeah, exotic.
The musical Lynn's, now there's one that I'd love to find, too.
Oh, yeah, on Blue Feather. Yeah, that's a tough one. But
we have one, but we don't have the one.
You didn't know. I just found out Cordell Jackson just passed away.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I played a set of her stuff last week. She was great. I'd gotten a couple crazy letters from her a few years ago. Yeah. Did you ever see the great film Daniel Rose did of her? Kind
no.
of like a video of her shooting pool
no.
and playing and driving
no.
around in her matching canary yellow Cadillac
oh
and driving up to her canary yellow house.
Would match her blonde hair.
Yeah. No, wow. She's great. You know, it's totally inspiring to see people like that again who've made it a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that stops at 23.
As you know, once you've been infected by this stuff, there's no cure. You know, it's true, isn't it? I don't think radiation would help. It might make it worse.
Yeah, no. I mean, once you dig it, you can't quit. There's
thrill
no quota.
After thrill after thrill.
Wild for kicks.
And the kicks keep on coming. We're talking to Lux and Ivy of the Cramps, and it's a profound pleasure to have them down here in the fur-lined fallout shelter for the Fool's Paradise program. And while I got you here, I got to ask you about a mutual hero we share. Of course, the radio legend Pete Myers, best known as Mad Daddy. And Lux, you were able to hear Mad Daddy, and he cast a long shadow over.
I actually talked to him on the phone when he left. Cleveland, the week that he left to go to New York to be snubbed. I called him on the phone and I told him that I was the head of his fan club in Stowe, Ohio, and he believed that and talked to me. I actually had a little tape, 3-inch tape recording of it, that 3-inch reel to reel that I recorded with my friends, and my parents threw it away. They were afraid that this was going to be a bad influence. It was very insightful.
They were on the money.
He talked to me. He talked to me on the phone for like a couple of minutes in rhyme, just like on the radio show. And then afterwards, he said, "Look, I'm going to get the operator back. You can't afford this. You shouldn't be." And he says, "I'm going to pay for this call."
Wow.
He was just, I mean, and that actually happened, that just like that, and it didn't show up on my friend's. But we thought we'd have to explain that later, and it didn't show up.
What a hero.
Yeah.
Well, for the uninitiated, I've got just a short clip of Mad Daddy. I thought we'd give a roll here. So let's take and he was so great, so talented, that the ads were exciting and bizarre.
It's just like a rock and roll record.
Straight razor.
So let's listen to the dehumidifier here.
Do you have a moldy basement? Is your basement full of toadstools and fungus? Is it causing damage? Don't lose tools and valuable clothes to rust and corrosion. The answer, of course, is an RCA Whirlpool electric dehumidifier. The world's only complete dehumidifier. Just plug it in, no pans to empty, no more moisture worries of any kind. The RCA Whirlpool electric dehumidifier turns itself on, takes the moisture out of the air, automatically empties the water into your drain, regardless of where the dehumidifier is placed, and then turns itself off. The RCA Whirlpool Electric Dehumidity, it removes 26 pints of water in 24 hours and is guaranteed to outperform any other on the market or your money back. A dehumidity is a must on a day like this, but just a dehumidifier alone is not enough. The RCA Whirlpool is the world's only completely automatic electric dehumidifier. I did it! From America's most complete family of home appliances, an RCA Whirlpool Electric dehumidifiers start at $88.
Yeah.
Man.
I never heard that one before.
Man of Manischewitz.
I mean, not in 60 years or so.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, and again, to think of teenagers listening to this every night for 3 hours.
I heard him when he was just broadcasting from a field, WJW, before he became, like, real well-known. And he was on some kind of drug, you know, amphetamines or something. He'd be out there, because he'd go into, like, 15-minute rants that were, like, and he'd say some really intense things that just kind of frightened me as a kid. And parents wouldn't even hear it happening. You know, he's talked so fast, they didn't even know what he said, you know. But, of course, kids were traveling at that speed, you know, and he'd just be saying all kinds of really bad, evil, satanic things.
Now, what is it about Ohio? Because not only did it spawn, Screamin' Jay Hawkins out of Cleveland and all those great garage band records and instrumental records on scads of oddball labels. Mm-hmm. Then Alan Freed came to prominence there, Mad Daddy, and then you had Goulardi.
Well, I think it's because it's the asshole of the earth. And I think that those kids know there's no way out. Don't believe anything anybody. You know, I think that's where the counterculture of the '60s started. Was probably the Goulardi. You know, those kind of people. Kids were listening to that. You know, waiting to hear the next out of control bad thing happen that they didn't see anywhere else. And those guys delivered. That's their whole thing. Like Mad Daddy, when he locked himself in the control room for 2 weeks and played some horrifyingly bad record, they just let him do it. They didn't even stop him. He just went on and on and on forever. And he could do it because they couldn't stop him, because it was the most highest rating that they ever had in broadcasting history there, you know. Everybody would not leave their radio. He's just standing in there ranting, you know, endlessly.
I mean, make no mistake about it, the stuff truly was subversive. You know, people have a happy days notion of the 50s and early 60s and malt shops. Yeah. This is pretty outrageous
stuff. These are my memories of the 50s. I hear people talking about how uptight the 50s were and how it was so square and how things changed in the 60s and stuff. I thought it started in the 50s, you know, with rock and roll, you know, with white kids loving black musicians and stuff like that, you know. Before that, it was like, you know, it was racism everywhere. It was, this is the beginning of the world as we know it today, you know, was starting then, you know. It didn't start, you know, in 1968.
And not to hammer on a conspiracy theory, but again, it was all these small record labels and radio stations and local TV stations could do kind of weird stuff. The opportunity existed, and some of them exploited it.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, most of them were talking so fast and such drive talk, nobody knew what they were saying anyhow, except the kids.
But it's odd about Ohio and Cleveland, because even when we were there in the 70s, Kid Leo, a WMMS, it's, you know, wasn't this wireless all else we've been talking about, but compared probably to what was happening elsewhere in the nation, was really good, you know, cutting edge. You know, he'd play like an entire album when it came out.
I mean, that's where the first rock and roll show happened, was at the Cleveland Arena. And like they expected 3,000 kids to show up, and 30,000 kids showed up, so it didn't happen. it was a riot instead, and they had to cancel it and have it, you know, a month later or something like that.
That's fantastic. And to return to Goulardi a little bit, did you have a chance to watch him or?
Oh, every week, everybody I knew, you know, you had to be home in time to watch Goulardi. It was just out of control. But Mad Daddy, you were talking about the wavy thing around his head and everything. Mad Daddy actually started that before Goulardi. That wavy thing in Mad Daddy, when he was a horror movie host on WJW, and he would, but he was a bat, so his it was just his head, that was wavy thing around the oscillating around the outside of the screen, and then his head upside down on the TV screen with a light on him, and because he was a bat hanging upside down.
He
so
also
you'd
sold
stand there and watch him, and it was an upside down head on your TV set. You know, it was real. That was really amazing.
And there's an old ad from an air check where he sold Batty Bucks, where kids could get shoes. You had a pair of Batty Bucks.
Yep. Batty Bucks.
Wow. They were like brown hush puppies, but they had a big black bat on the front of them, right? With the laces went through the bat.
This is something you got to sell at your shows. Have some cramps Batty Bucks.
Yeah. Make a return of the Batty Bucks.
Yeah, that's when I first became a star at school with my Batty Bucks.
That's great. It's like terrorize the fifth graders.
And there were Goulardi shakes, didn't you say? Where like
oh, I was constantly sick from the Goulardi, the big Goulardi milkshakes.
Well, they were blue, right?
They were dyed kind in blue of fluorescent green, blue green.
Uh-huh. So I've got one of those old Manners mugs, and you could see through the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a little clip of Goulardi, a very short clip, but this gives a real sense of again how truly subversive he was. Let's check out this quick clip.
Goulardi plays nothing but poker. See, what you do in poker, you get a girl and you poke her.
Now, is that really fitting for 13-year-olds? I think so.
Of course.
But
they have to learn sometime.
That's right. And those existing clips of the Goulardi show are just so liberating. And
I imagine now, like 80 years later or however long it is, you couldn't take little models of suburbia from train sets and stuff with the mom waving goodbye to the dad salesman going off in his car and everything and blow them up.
Right.
That would be deemed unacceptable, I think.
Yeah. So any other radio heroes over the years?
Those were the two big
ones. Two biggies,
yeah. There was nothing spectacular in Sacramento. There was,
right.
Johnny Hyde was the local guy. It wasn't that great. And I guess the other interesting ones we've heard was later was, the Dewey Phillips.
Oh, sure.
Really cool.
The pill fuel frenzy.
Oh, Jasbo Collins. That we weren't exposed to growing up.
Also, Tim Conway was there with Goulardi at that same time and everything. So he was doing some pretty wacky stuff. Now, it was called Tom Conway then, but he was doing some crazy stuff. And there was another disc jockey, I can't remember his name, but he'd make up these long, elaborate stories. I can't remember his name, but it was really great. He'd have a story about the kid that was going to Washington to these things would go on for 2 minutes about a kid going to Washington, and he was so excited about getting to the Washington Monument to see the Washington Monument, but you had to sign in before you went in there, and these two nuns were signing the book and everything, and the kid was running, trying to run past him, his mother was holding him and everything like that, and the kid says, "I want to go, Mom, I want to go, Mom," and the mother said to him, "Wait till the nuns sign, Shelley." And he'd do dumbass things like that. He'd just make this stuff up on and on and on. But I can't even remember his name.
Wow. Now, you guys have always been big movie fans, horror films, monster movies. That's informed a lot of what the Cramps do.
I think those things are like little nightmares. You know, they're usually made by one or two people and who had the idea and filmed it. And they most of the time don't make any sense on, normal people's level. But they make so much sense. It's like looking at some kind of a real Dada or a surrealist painting or something. On some other level, it makes much more sense than anything you encounter in normal everyday life.
I guess I might be considered a less discerning film fan, because if there are some good lines of dialogue and a weird character actor in a movie, I'm happy. I'm glad I'm watching.
You've got to love Blood Feast just for the line where the two detectives are standing there, I remember, and they're looking at each other, and then the one looks down. Supposedly he's looking down at the desk and says, "Looks like another long, hard one."
Bill Kerwin at his best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any movies listeners should know about? Just a quick checklist of anything you'd want to hip them to?
I guess one of our latest tangents is the Misty Monday movies.
Those are good new ones.
Uh-huh.
Don't check out Spider Babe.
That's
a great one.
Yeah.
Spider Babe is great.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that it doesn't have to be horror movies. It can be actual good movies. too, mm-hmm. that we're seeing.
I know they're making a movie about the cramps right now. It's going to be a Misty Monday. A star is going to play Ivy, and Jim Carrey is playing me, and it's directed by Tinto Brass. It's going to be amazing.
Are you serious?
Well, right now it's only in my mind, but okay. it's coming soon.
Coming to an imaginary double feature near yeah. you. Yeah, yeah. Have you ever given thought to what kind of movies you'd like to program if you had a drive-in for a week?
Well, there's an endless supply, that's for sure. Robot Monster is probably my all-time favorite.
Oh, yeah.
That's for what we were just talking about, sheer inexplicability, 100% pure unfathomableness.
Yeah, and you really can't argue with the Robot Monster formula. Gorilla suit plus space helmet equals movie.
I also like the yesterday. I like scientific explanations, especially when they're unbelievably long. And there's like a 20-minute one in the Yesterday machine. That's a great movie. Starts out with this sexy girl twirling batons, doing her baton just to show her for like 10 minutes or something like that. And the guy saying, "Come on, quit twirling your baton. We've got." She goes, "I know. I have to practice." And they just keep showing it until a flying saucer lands. And
yeah.
Then there's endless scientific explanations forever.
Right, you get a lot of the never-ending chase scenes to pad out the movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's got to be 60 minutes.
Yeah, different part of it's daylight, part of it's night. Keep cutting different times.
Yeah. Well, we're talking with Lux and Ivy, the Cramps. They've got a great new double CD, How to Make a Monster, and I guess instead of dwelling just on obscure records and movies, as much as I love doing that, let's talk a little bit about the band. I mean, how long have you guys been performing together officially?
Since 1976, however long that is.
It's our bicentennial year.
82,
somebody make us stop.
5 years, I think, in 4 months.
Yeah.
Wow. And were any other band names ever considered at all?
Bop Crazy Babies, because there was that, was it Vern Pullins that we had found out in what's a place just west of Cleveland? And he had a song called Bop Crazy Babies, and I don't know, somehow I guess the Cramps, at the time it was before there were punk rock names, and there were no names, you know, like the Kinks or the Pretty Things, where you're something like a gang. Everything was like Aerosmith and
Featherwheel.
Yeah, Featherroot or something. You know?
Thunder Mug. Just, yeah. Gentle Giant.
Yeah, so that actually seemed like kind of subversive to us to just be like, you know, where everyone can be a Cramp or the Cramps. And by the time we got it going and up on stage, there was Ramones and the Dead Boys. So it somehow, so there must have been like a collective mentality for it anyway. But
oh, yeah.
But there wasn't when we were thinking of it, though.
Over the years, any cover songs you wanted to do but just couldn't get it together or something that's been on the...
Yeah, we've had many bands that couldn't play the ones...
yeah, it depends on who's been in the band. Yeah, the song we wanted to do, or they either couldn't or didn't like the song or something. That's been frustrating.
They'd say, how many notes in that song again? I don't know about that one.
I want to do I'm a Hog for You, Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're thinking of that one.
Yeah, we'll Coasters. Still do that. Yeah. But we want to do the version by The Innocents.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Boy, that's a great one.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't the groupies also do, is it the flip of Primitive,
is
Hog for Your Baby?
Oh, we got to listen to that.
Yeah.
Because what we like to do when we cover is listen to every version and make a horrible hybrid of that and crampify it. And
very early Alice Cooper, they did it too, back
oh
when
God.
They're in Phoenix.
Wow.
Phoenix. Well, that was a Freudian slip tease. That was when they were in Phoenix. Yeah.
Well, now, Ivy, there's this great guitar solo, of course, great lick in Hog for You, Baby.
Yeah.
Any other kind of signature licks that are just constant
there
sources?
Are in, like, some real hits where you went thinking, like, Tallahassee Lassie. Is that the one that has the Roy Buchanan? He just rips through this incredibly
right.
burning lead. Because that's what I'm always surprised when there's, like, a hit thing that has, like, a really ripping lead.
Who did that song, Crazy Little House on the Hill?
Gene Lamar, right, you know, yeah.
On Spry Records.
Something like that.
Spry Records,
Spry,
yes,
right. Yeah. I just see the label, they just appear.
Yeah.
Now, we had Deke Dickerson and the Echophonics on a few weeks ago, and we had a segment called Road Apples, where we go, you know, Tales of the Tour. And since you've been playing since 76, I just wanted to get your view on a few topics. First one, if you could name the most underrated city.
Just several.
With some, like, hidden cool aspects to it.
Well, recently we just discovered Asheville, North Carolina. That's a really cool city. Like, really old beatniks live there.
Yeah, mountain. Yeah, mountains
it's beautiful. And, you know, it's hill country. It's where some of the best, you know, bluegrass and all came from that region. And now it's like, I mean, like old beatniks.
Yeah, you get hippies making whole grain bread there. Yeah. Like, what the hell?
And and you go into to like eating. There's one. We went and eaten this one restaurant where they said it was home cooking or something like that. And they're selling wine in big gallon jugs with a little ring on the top of it, so you can go like that. And this is radio. Excuse me, I just went like
tilt
that.
It up.
Yeah.
For those of you who can't see what I'm doing.
Well, that also leads to another topic, a best meal restaurant that you discovered over the years. Anything really stick out?
Well, one was that because another city I like is Pittsburgh, you know, home of Mad Mike, et cetera, a real cool city. And there's a cool restaurant there, Joe Mama's. We ate out on the road that we love in Pittsburgh.
That's a
really
great
cool, with all these fake 8x10s. And we fell for it at first because we thought that all these celebrities had been there, like Jane Mansfield. And so we started seeing, you know, like Albert Einstein and all. But we still, it wasn't until we got to the Elvis one we realized that it was a joke, you know, that they had all these fake autographs and fake, like dedications to the owner, to Joe at Joe Mama's.
Betty Page right next to Albert Einstein.
Yeah,
your Albert
desserts
Einstein
make me
says,
dance.
Joe, you're a genius.
Yeah, Betty Page, your desserts make me dance. And so there's all these crazy pictures. The food's great. And it's just nutty looking. It looks totally like a 40s film noir diner. And it's in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh has Ides Records. You still get cool records there. And it's got that great history with with Porky Chidwick. And
oh, Porky's still out there.
Still out there?
Yeah, we had Porky on the show and played some Porky clips. And he's crazy. He's never left Pittsburgh. And the whole world is 1955 to him.
Good for him.
And it's, yeah, that's fine. Now, let's move on with the road apples. The next topic, a sleaziest motel you ever stayed in.
Oh, one would be the Alamo in, is that the name of that one in Memphis?
Yeah.
Where it had a, it has an Alamo motif. All the rooms are kind of this.
You think people would stay away from
it? It looks interesting, but the carpet, it's got this, that weird, not AstroTurf, but that kind of weird indoor-outdoor carpeting, and it's permanently damp and moldy in there on the floor of it.
Yeah.
Really gross.
That's where, when we went down to record the first time with Alex Chilton in Memphis, that's where we stopped, was at the Alamo Motel. It's a lovely, it looks nice on the postcard.
Yeah.
But we resorted to sleeping on floors at friends' houses instead. That was an upgrade.
Yeah. Some of those motels, you open up the door and you know someone lost their life in there. Or something horrible happened.
I know. No, because we're very psychic, too, and we've been what we thought could tell something very vividly.
Haunted ones.
Yeah.
How about least compatible opening band or show bill over the years?
I hate to rag on people, though. I like to focus on the positive.
Yeah.
Accentuate positive. But, okay, well, as long as you started it, let me think. Least compatible.
Well, Quintron, that was kind of not compatible. He's great.
Oh,
and the
great
records are great. But he almost got thrown off stage. They're throwing stuff at him when he first started because he opened with the puppet show instead of opening with music.
Yeah.
And there's all these cramps fans, you know, chomping at the bit and everything like that and going crazy. And they're all, you know, fueled by drugs and everything. And he comes out, you know, like, well, hi, Binky, how are you doing? I'm doing fine, Larry. You know, a little puppet show there. We're playing this huge place. He's got these hand puppets, you know, up in a little stage there. You know, nobody can see what he's doing there. But
a lot of times we pick a band and they get booed. I mean, that wouldn't be the first. But I thought, like, what's least compatible with us? What would that be?
What's least compatible with us?
Jazz fusion group or something.
Yeah.
Nothing that bad.
Yeah. Well, no. We played with Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks. We played with
them
one time. Well, that's good too. But he refused. He saw us at soundcheck and said, "Nope, I'm opening the show. They're closing."
He wanted to follow electric with an acoustic because he's more acoustic. Yeah, that was weird.
Wow. That is an odd bill. Let's move on then. How about the best thrift store or thrift shop you've ever been to? Did you find some like store stock cha-cha heels somewhere? Or?
There was a Salvation Army one right in the middle of Cleveland, right very close to WJW TV there, where it was just amazing. It was just like a department store of 45s in there. And you could go in there early in the morning and stay there all day and not get through it.
Yeah,
know?
Records,
and just amazing
clothes,
records in there.
Crazy old furniture, fabulous stuff, cheap.
Yeah, I hate to admit this, but I have I dream about finding stuff, going to a garage sale or whatever, and then you know you don't have a car to take it home, or you can't figure out how to get all the stuff.
A frustrating dream, I see.
Or somebody's gonna pick up, or somebody standing right next to you is gonna go, "Wow, it's the one that it's Stormy Weather by the Five Sharps."
Yeah, they right ahead of you.
This is worth $87,000. Of course, I'll never sell it, so it's worth nothing. But.
I remember having a very vivid dream of coming across a 50s motel that was going out of business, and they were getting rid of everything with the coin-operated bed vibrators and all the cool stuff, and I was just panicking on how to get this in and then shoehorn it into the apartment, and then I woke up and had some Cocoa Puffs. Yeah, yeah. So continuing on with Road Apple's smallest crowd you ever played for?
Two? Sailors.
Yeah.
In Washington, D.C.
What a great crowd.
They had they didn't promote the show properly. I think the deal was that we were supposed to be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, or Thursday and Friday. But the first day we were there hadn't been advertised, so no one was there but these two drunken sailors. And we're there. We didn't have anything else to do.
They were doing
with
cartwheels
ourselves.
In front of
and
us.
And so we played. You know, it was like, well, okay, well, we're here. You know, it's kind of, you know, too bad. But, you know, and they just went nuts. They didn't know who we were. I don't know why they were there. They were just there to drink. They were drunk.
It was also the weirdest audience because there was actually three people there. There were the two drunken sailors, and there was a rock critic that stayed like 100 feet away in the back of the room with a typewriter. And he was doing a review of it with a typewriter. And I thought, well, this is what rock music is all about today. You know?
Wow.
A band, two drunken sailors, and a rock critic writing with a typewriter.
That's right up there with Napa State Hospital,
yeah,
I would think. How about the most ridiculous request you've ever received?
Earnest
request.
Well, we had a record company executive, and we were a certain label, when we did some radio benefit, which they're never really benefits. They just claim that their expenses were high, but, you know, whatever. But, you know, we were told to do this radio, big, you know, I'm talking about these, like, chain radio, whatever you call that, you know, the Edge or whatever, you know. And it was a Christmas time thing with a lot of bands, and this certain executive asked, will you sing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer with this other band that was on the bill? They might be giants,
so
we also like
to.
They're really cool guys.
After we finish Surfin' Bird,
you know, like,
and we're going to get together with, you know, all these other bands and sing Rudolph the Red-Nosed
Reindeer.
And
we thought it was kind of like, oh, that's funny, you know, and he says,
I mean it, or you're fired.
So definitely the most ridiculous request would be from a record company executive, a major label record company.
I did sing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for him, though, while they were playing Surfin' Bird. So everybody was happy in the end.
A unique hybrid. Now, best driving song or artist? A personal favorite would be Conway Twitty's Big Town, you know, like heavy guitar, like a great one to
that would be really great.
Hit the roads with.
Well, before we started the Cramps, we got one of these new gizmos called a cassette player, and we'd set it on operate on batteries, and we'd set it on the seat, and we'd always drive around. We'd be listening to Flamin' Groovy's Grease and More Grease EPs because they're just, you know, they were on drugs and they're just like 90 miles an hour, amphetamine thing.
Music.
We just
drive
into that, listen to that, mixed with the, you know, driving rockabilly songs and stuff. Modern Lovers, some of that kind of stuff. I guess Modern Lovers, that was a little bit later. But we were still driving around then.
With the radio on, yeah.
Yeah, and frantic rockabilly, you know, Ray Harris, Come On Little Mama, that kind of just frantic thing while you're speeding through traffic.
Ray Harris is my favorite photo. He's got that sailor hat on, the cigarette. It's like the, you know, it's not the Urso Hickey. It's Ray Harris.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, this guy's going to kick my ass.
Yeah.
Yeah,
all those sun guys, I think, are going to kick your ass. Another thing about the 50s people, those guys are dangerous people. It's a good thing they're kept busy making records because they just seem like they're ready to go off.
Well, there's some great liner notes in one of those Link reissues that talk about the knife fights in these clubs outside D.C. You know, it was like a rough crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there was a girl that she got all when she saw us at CBGB. She started going out by Jack Scott, The Way I Walk, and buying all these records. And all of a sudden, she is wearing poodle skirts and fuzzy dice and all this kind of stuff. She says, "I'm going to go down there. I'm going to go down there and interview some of these guys and everything." You know, and she came back like 2 weeks later saying, "They all tried to rape me."
Good for you, boys. Come over here, honey. Sit on my lap there. Yeah.
Now, we've covered driving songs. What's the best part about coming home?
Being able to drive, because when we tour, we're on a bus and we don't have a car. And that's nice because it makes it easier. You can sleep on a bus overnight. But just being behind a wheel, that's the best part of getting home. And we can't wait. We'll even do it just to get our bags. I said, "Well, we'll get a cab to get your bag." And you're like, "No, I want my car." You know, and
that's the best way to listen to rock and roll, in a car driving.
Yeah, I know some different record producers would throw stuff on cassettes and listen to it in a car, because that's where most people are going to listen to it.
We always do it. Yeah, we hear it in different ways. At home, we don't hear the detail that we hear when we're in the car. Somehow, when you're right there in that small space with it, there's just all kinds of stuff going on that I guess when you're home, you're messing around doing things. Or you just don't hear everything.
When you're in a car, some way you can tell that this is a dud. Or, "Wow, this is great. This is the best thing that ever happened." You know, you can tell.
Then there are the occasional records that just totally lock in when you're driving, and all of a sudden you're excited and revitalized, and it's 2 a.m. or whatever, and you're... You ever do that? Listen to one song over and over and over again?
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
There's a song by the Fleetwoods, a cappella version of Unchained Melody. It's like, talk about a great vocal group record. It's unbelievable. It's a cappella. It's unbelievably amazing. It's like drugs, that song. It's really great.
I think the one I've played the most over and over is Time Funnel by Jan Davis. There's something about it. I have to play it again as soon as it ends, over and over and over.
Yeah, I always love the stories of Phil Spector clearing out his house with guests by locking in on one record and playing it at deafening volumes.
Oh, we did that when our neighbor's house went up for sale, when there were certain people looking at the house, ones that, you know, like if they had, like, kids and stuff, we were, like, blasting, like, you know, the most satanic thing out our window we could, and it seemed to work because we got cool neighbors there, and now they babysitting our cats. But
I forget the name of that record. It's some kind of really dumbass heavy metal song that's, like, just really just the worst thing that you ever heard, you know, and no one could like it.
Yeah,
the band that made it probably didn't like it, you know, and we just would blast that. You'd see, and they'd turn around before they got the front door.
I had a Neighbor Warfare CD, the World Saxophone Quartet. It's just like a ton of saxophones bleeding as loud as possible, and that really sends a message, just like a ferocious, angry roar. Yeah. Now, you mentioned you have cats. So what are their names?
Torchy. Her nickname's Shorty. Cleopatra. She has a few nicknames. And Opal, who's kind of feral, but she's friendly with us. She was feral for her first year. Torchy and Cleo are sisters.
All right.
We can't tell. Opal might be a monkey. We can't tell.
Yeah. He calls her a squat because she's part squirrel and part cat.
A simian bastard.
Yeah.
Now, Halloween's coming up, of course. It's got to be a favorite time of year for you.
Definitely.
Any notable costumes over the years that were favorites?
I just like putting on a dress.
Sure.
Any old dress. But I got a great one. This I found it in Knoxville, Tennessee, in a junk store there. Ivy found it, actually, and said, "Here, this is you."
This is you.
It's like something Liberace would wear at home. It fits me perfectly, and it's like a photographs of material with buckles and straps all over it.
Photograph
but
of leather.
It's like polyester. Yeah, photograph of leather straps, you know.
Wow.
It's really great.
Where will you be debuting this gown?
In San Francisco.
Okay. Very good.
We're playing there with Davey Allen and the Arrows.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
He's a real hero.
Certainly is. Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be great.
His UFO is certainly a great out-of-control record.
Well, Lux and Ivy, thanks so much for crawling down here into the Fruitland Fallout Shelter and talking.
Thank you. Boy, it's wet in here, though. Jeez.
It's a little damp, and I apologize for that.
You've got that clammy indoor-outdoor.
What is that smell?
Sorry about the lizards, too. We're going to have Goulardi say goodbye for you. I thought that would be a great way to say goodbye to the listeners. And thanks again. And everyone, pick up How to Make a Monster. Terrific CD. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Gulardi says come back. We'll see you next week. Be good. Stay sick.
What have you done to my child, the radio broadcast? You have debased this child, dressed him in rags of ragtime, tatters of jive and boogie-woogie.
Well. Yeah. We left the Atomic Space Hound and the Wavy Gravy at home. So you're just going to get me with a little reverb. Hey, thanks to the Cramps. It was a lot of fun. Lux and Ivy sharing a little bit of themselves. And, we had fun talking to them. And hope you enjoyed it. Trust that you did. And happy to have them hip you to so many interesting things. In fact, in that last set, we played a track from the most recent double CD, How to Make a Monster, Everything Goes. It's like a rehearsal tape from 1988. Before that, however, was the Mad Daddy spot for the Batty Bucks that Lux was making reference to. The ultimate shoe for rock and roll, Batty Bucks. Let's do hope they bring them back. Pick Me before that. And, that gets you up to date for the Muzak portion. And, again, our thanks to Lux and Ivy for swinging by and giving a little gab session. We've got some announcements that we'll get to in a little bit, but I thought we'd jump into some music because we've got this cool 45 queued up by Pinocchio and the Puppets. Yeah, Cowboys and Indians. Let's get to it directly here on the Fun 91 WFMU.